bad. There's so much going on out there.
I think we've been in the process of hiring the regional branch managers. We've gotten to hire 2 librarians, and now we're hiring library assistants to really fill in all those hours. So it's been a really exciting time. A lot of the sort of energetic younger people in our organization have had the opportunity to move up, which has been really, really fun to give people who've been working hard a chance to do more. So again, it feels like there's a lot of chaos still. A lot of people have new bosses and new places that they're working, but I think the outcome's turning out to be really great. It's a new age.
A new dawn.
Okay, any comments from anyone on the commission? Any comments from the public? Everybody, every opportunity. The next item on the agenda is member reports. Anything?
Yes? Well, I could say that there's going to be a meeting May 9th. The county is hosting their meeting to basically unveil the site plans. And so the architect and the landscape architect will be there along with county staff and various people. It'll be at Highland Senior Center in Ben Lomond. And this is a big step because it precedes submitting all of the reports to the county for CEQA review and so forth. So I know people are working as fast as they can, but it is a complicated piece of 2 acres plus, but and our mitigation requirements are fairly stringent. But it all goes sort of with the theme of the library, which is protecting the environment. So yeah, it's good, even though it's difficult. And then May 20th, Fountain Library Friends is holding a fantastic figures festival. And it's going to have 11 sort of sculptures by local artists. And it's going to be fun. And one of the reasons that we're doing it is because there's still a lot of people in the community who don't even know the library is happening because they've been waiting for so long. And so we figured that, well, this can be a real hands-on. It's going to be very child-centric, and there'll be music and food, plus these figures that are going to be really interesting, I must say. And we'll have the site plans there that were at the community meeting. Who knows how many people will get to that. So we'll really be able to clue the community into what's going on and to, you know, recruit new members or for volunteer projects. So,
where is that going to be?
It's going to be on the land.
On the land.
Yeah, so it's if you know where Highway 9 is, you know where the land is?
Yeah.
Okay, next to the post office.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Any other reports? More reports? Okay, moving on to the consent calendar. The only thing we have on it is the minutes for the last meeting. Do we have a motion to approve consent?
Absent.
Oh, yeah, she was
approved.
Your motion?
Yeah.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I don't know, can we approve it with only 3 of us?
I can approve.
Yeah, you can
but
approve
too.
You
have too. To vote to have it approved.
Yeah.
So, that's
because good. Otherwise we won't.
And
but you are allowed to vote if you weren't there.
I'm sorry, it was lesson?
You are allowed to vote if you weren't there.
I vote yes.
Okay, then it's unanimous. Right. Moving right along, the next item on the agenda is general business. Spotlight on STEAM programs.
And I want to ask Janice to come up and join us. You know, this is our ongoing attempt to talk about the strategic plan. As you know, children and youth programs are a key part of our work plan. And specifically, we're working on 3 areas: that children are ready for kindergarten, that students are successful, and that we build strong relationships with K-12 education. And to be honest, one of the things we really wanted to do is get the librarians in place at the branches and the regional managers in place before we start building the specifics of a work plan. Because we really feel like they need to get out there and they need to sort of ascertain what the climate is like before we move it. But in the meantime, and I have to say Santa Cruz Public Library has been for a number of years trying to develop their STEAM programs, and we want to share with you some of the really exciting things we've been doing. So Janice is here to introduce this.
Yeah, we are very excited to be able to present some of the things we do in our STEAM work, partly because it gives one of our new regional managers a chance to show what she can do, and over the next few months you'll meet the other two regional managers as topics come up that they are going to address. The other reason that we're happy to talk about our STEAM programs is because it's a great example of a loyal, wonderful volunteer. A volunteer right here, who Laura is going to introduce. She's sort of subtly pointing him out.
Sort of.
And it gives a chance for local staff, Jen, in this case, to show what she can do and look at what public libraries can offer school-aged children. The STEAM programs for us are for school-aged children. They're mostly happen after school, sometimes on Saturdays, and of course it's science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. They're very, very popular. There's a range of programs that we do that Laura and Steve and Jen are going to talk about. They've become very important to us. We started them out just to see what would happen, and now we just can't actually do enough. So we wanted you to know about them. We want you to meet these wonderful people. Laura, by the way, is the regional manager for the Valley. So she's Scotts Valley, Felton, and Boulder Creek. That's her responsibility. All right, Laura.
Hi.
Hello.
This is Steve Meek.
Hi, Steve.
Amazing Lego Master volunteer. I've been at the downtown library recently. The big Lego mega figs that are in our art display.
Wow.
And Steve and I became co-conspirators, I'm quite sure, about 2.5 years ago?
Yeah, it's been about 2.5 years now.
I had started a Lego build program at Garfield Park, Catherine's. And after about 12 weeks, I was running out of things in my mind what I could do with the kids. And our volunteer coordinator emailed me, said, there's this guy who's interested in volunteering with the Lego clubs. Okay, so come now. We met, and within one class, Steve was the teacher, and I was the gopher. Really well. We went from having 8 kids to having up to 24. Have you been in Garfield?
Oh, my God.
The space that all those kids are in is less than half the size of this room. Totally take over the library. It's so much fun.
One of the things I've taken over that library is, the best thing is, a lot of the patrons in that library, they know us. They know the library. When I show up on Lego Day, and they know the kids show up, and Laura's great with that, is a lot of them know when they leave, and then they come back right after the Lego Day, because they know all those kids do show up.
And Steve and I have about the same philosophy with the kids. They've been in school all day. They need a chance to go off to steam and have some fun.
Some steam?
And it was about a year or so ago, I said to Steve, what do you know about Lions? And he said, not much. How little do you know? And it turns out he had these wonderful things available that are Lego NXT Mindstorm, basically computers. And all of a sudden he came to me after not talking about this, and he had this plan for this program, RoboSumo.
What's it called? Robo?
RoboSumo. It's robotics practicing the ancient art of sumo wrestling. And components, and they're all broken down when they first get them, and they get a software program. And the great thing about this is there are steps that they go through. So if any of you are familiar with Lego Simple Machines, which is a program that we offer down at the Appalachian Center for Beach Libraries, that you follow the build as it's shown on the software, and then you get what you're looking for. This is the next step. You follow the procedures, you put it together, but then you have to program it.
Nice.
And with the programming, I was thinking, because I didn't know this program at all, same thing, you just follow
it. Yeah, right.
But it's a lot more than that, because once you get the program going, you have to fine-tune it. Because if you just tell it to go, and you don't tell it how fast, these things shoot across the tables like no one's business. And Steve, being Steve, when we got to the sound, they have sensors for sound, he told the kids, yeah, the higher pitch you can be, the better for these. And the girls, the other neat thing is we have girls that participate.
It's really
higher voices. They didn't have to have great volume, but they would get their high pitch and they would go.
Well, it measures the octaves in their voice. So you can scream and you still have the same octave. Or you can talk lower, like my voice, and have the same octave. The microphone picks that up and it will give a digital readout of it. And with the story that Ola is telling is, the guys couldn't figure out how come the girls' octone decibel numerical representation was so much higher than theirs. And so Laura had to educate the guys, the boys in the class, that, well, girls have higher pitched voice. It's got nothing to do about how loud you're yelling or screaming. It's the octone of your voice. So we quickly ended up with that when we go outside, because the boys thought they could change the octone pitch of their voices by screaming.
Oh, no.
One discovered falsetto actually works better than screaming than the others. If you've ever been around 9 and 10 year old boys trying to...
12 of them.
But then they discovered by clapping you could make it do things, and so they're all... And 12 of them doing it in the room, it was crazy.
To jump in on with Laura real quick, is like these are known as sensor blocks. Each block is like this one's a push sensor, a touch sensor. So it coordinates with the touch sensor. That's okay. And each module, the kids have to build, have to follow the instructions. They're teams of two. So the kids have to work together. And they're not paired up with their friends, they're paired up with anybody who comes in the class. So part of this theme is the kids have to learn how to communicate and work together to build the models. So when they make their model, they build the section, they program it, because robots won't do anything without being programmed. I mean, literally, they have to be programmed to do anything. So you program it to drive forward when you touch the touch sensor. Well, okay, so the lesson's done, but that's not the end of the lesson. Each sensor has parameters. They're limitless. So it could be a quick touch. It could be a touch and hold for 30 seconds. So the kids get to play with the parameters of all the different sensors. And there's like the sound sensor. And this one is the ultrasonic. It looks like eyeballs. It'll actually measure the distance to the walls.
Yeah.
And everything.
And the reason they have all the sensors is...
Oh, I see. Oh, this is like a microphone.
12 weeks?
Yes, it's 12 weeks right now.
12 weeks, they go through all the different steps. They put them together. They test them. They fine-tune them. They get them doing what they want them to do. And then we make them tear them completely down. Put them back in their boxes. The next week, they come in, and this is the real build. They're building a unique creation that's not going to look like what they built in the 12 weeks, 10 weeks before. But something of their own design. This is where the art component for the STEM comes in.
And you can also turn off the domain portion of the program to where they don't have access to the schooling anymore.
So now
it's what they want.
And so they're designing their robot to compete in sumo wrestling.
Sure. How do you know when you turn that all around?
I'm on Steve Pop.
Yep.
Steve Pop.
Yep.
All right.
If they will actually battle with each other.
That was one match. It's just like the regular sumo. Let's try to make them find each other.
Okay. One of the sensors that you didn't get to see us because it's on the robot is the color sensor. It'll actually measure the color of the rainbow. So these are programmed to see the black line, stop, turn around, and go the other way. And so they get three matches. It's double elimination, but in each match you have three attempts to win. So each match lasts three deaths, three losses. Then they go to the secondary bracket. The brackets are like it. We're Santa Cruz, we have 9 teams. So the brackets are set up this way. So let's say match one, Sam won. So Sam goes over to the next top bracket, but Lou goes down to the secondary bracket. So they actually get 6 times to play on the match on the final day. Before they get 100 points. They're not allowed to do anything on the match day other than adjust their robot programs and repairs. They can't build, they can't change. So it becomes very competitive on the final day.
Now, our first tournament, which was at Berkeley Park, one of the robots spun his tail and was trying to get the other robot off it went. And then one, they actually programmed it to go into the middle of the ring, fall over, and make squee noises. Until it got pushed off to the side. And our dark horse winner was our one girl.
Yay!
Who took out the brothers. It was absolutely amazing. The girl team was so much fun. But one of the neat things with this, and especially with the teamwork that the kids have, we do get kids who are on the spectrum. And one of our participants, he's very much on the spectrum. He partners with his mother.
He's actually on his own in this house.
He's on his own, yeah. Awesome. His mom started bringing him to the Lego class, and then he's expanded here. And the kids in the beginning at Lego, the other kids in the class, were kind of looking. This young man doesn't like to be called by his official name.
Right.
He prefers being on the SpongeBob. And the other kids, that was a little odd for them, but over the course of this program, when they've seen him working with them, and he's working with them, helping, and they're helping him, now he's just Sponge.
And they look for him if he doesn't show up to the class, because they know he's always there.
Yeah. When they were gone, he and his mom went to Disneyland.
Yeah, and Hawaii.
And Hawaii. All the other kids were kind of, no, we can't start yet. Sponge isn't here. He's having a lot of work on the Lego course. But he's blown.
Yeah, he's really come up.
He talks to everybody now. He comes up, he shows you what you guys. And the other kids have gotten much more accepting of kids who aren't like they are. Mm-hmm. So with this program and Steve, it's all about Steve.
It's all about the kids.
We've now done it at Garfield. It's currently being done at downtown. Mm-hmm. And in the summer, it's going to Boulder Creek. In the fall, it's going to be here in Scotts Valley. We're hoping if we can work out details that it can go to Live Oak late spring. If I still have this guy on site, as soon as Felt opens, and we have the program space there, I think this would be a really fun. And thank you for all these first long series. Steve's willing to go anywhere in the system.
Wouldn't it be a great follow-up, though, to the Lego things at Aptos and LaSalle Beach?
Yes.
From
I would
the
love
South
to get
County.
Sandy. Yeah. Love to well,
the whole, one of the goals of when Nora was talking about this and the evolution of this program is, we now have a winner in Garfield Park, Lou.
Yeah.
That's her name, Lou. What's her partner? She never showed, so it's just Lou.
Oh, Sarah.
Sarah, yeah, she didn't show up tonight. So we have a winner at Garfield Park. In May, we're going to have a winner in Santa Cruz.
So now you...
We get around to all the branches. We bring all the winners back together, and then we have a championship built on for the library system.
That's a really
That's,
good idea.
You know, to get your guys' system working together.
Yeah.
Knowing we're all one library.
Right.
Not
badly.
Yeah, not fighting with each other, but work. I mean, right. That competition builds fun.
Right.
And fun builds, you know. Yeah.
The other neat thing I'm going to bring up, because this is something that's near and dear to Star Wars. May 4th is coming up. We're going to be having the second annual Star Wars Day at downtown. And this is all because of this guy. Star Wars Day for us is when we can present the STEAM programs that we do throughout the system. So Sandy Simple Machines, the Origami, Jen, I'm hoping we'll have the 3D printer down there. Steve will be here. We bring out the Chess Masters for that. The Lego Clubs, which we have four now in the system. It's a chance for staff to play wrestle as well. And the 501st Golden Gate Garrison. Those folks that wear the Star Wars costumes and the Stormtroopers, they come down to the library.
Okay.
We have a lot coming this year.
Yeah, we got a lot coming this
year. We got real popular with them last year, and so we have quite a few coming this year.
And Atlanta's Fantasy World has Mandalorian Raiders, which are the Boba Fets. So we partner with them. And it's our chance to have fun, but also to show to the entire community everything we're doing STEAM wise. And with that, I'm going to pass on to Jim.
I'm going to pause a second. I just want to bring it back to the strategic plan. And one of the questions I get is, what does this have to do with the library's mission? And I just want to say, our mission has always been about learning, not just reading. And I think in the 21st century, learning is in some ways going back to doing the way it did 100 years ago. The other thing I just want to say is, the library's also been about sharing resources so that people can have access to things that they probably couldn't do necessarily at home. And I think this is a great use of the public resources to give kids of all income levels the opportunity to do some of this. And again, I think where we fit also is learning can be fun. I mean, that's one of the key components to a library. It's like reading to enjoy. It's summer reading is all about teaching kids that they can find things that they read that they love, not just the work assignment. You know, again, we're trying to show the children in our community that these can be inspiring and fun and creative activities, that the libraries teaches you to be excited about learning and hopefully creates a child that wants to learn their whole life.
Can I ask a question, or do you want us to do it at the end?
No, go ahead.
I'm just curious about outreach. So it sounds like you're at capacity for what you can handle now. How was it just advertised on the library website,
or
did you guys do outreach into the schools?
That's my major thing. The community doesn't know anything that goes on in the library, to be honest.
Not enough.
It doesn't. How I found Laura was an accident. Part of the thing that I push and I push, is I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I blow up all the stuff. When I talk a little bit here at the Lego Club, here at Scotts Valley, our first class, we had like 5 people. So I got a hold of that realtor who does the Scotts Valley.
Albana.
Is that a gentleman?
Robert Albana.
Yeah. I got a hold of him. He blew it up. We had 30 kids show up, and they had to turn some away. But there's no advertising. The community really honestly doesn't know what goes on in the library. That's where putting together the May 4th thing was. Everybody in the home, not everybody had come out, knows about Star Wars. And so it's a way to get the community who doesn't know what goes on at the library to come and find out what the library, what you guys do. I mean, I lived in Santa Cruz. I'm 40-something. I didn't know that you guys did this. I would have been here years ago. Okay, I mean, so part of your guys' growth and part of what I'm pushing, and Laura, I'm driving crazy, and poor Catherine, she, I don't know why I do that, is reach out to your community. Because, like this class, during Parks and Rec, they charge $500 per student.
Yeah.
And we're giving it for free.
Yeah. And so, really, this is such a good question. I kind of want to hold it. Mm-hmm. I love your answer, but I want to hold it to the end because, in some ways, mm-hmm. that's part of the question I want to discuss tonight. We have limitations on capacity. The biggest one is going away, and it's space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In some branches.
Mm-hmm. But I think this is the challenge and the conversation I'd like to have tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I'm Jennifer Hooker. I'm one of the librarians here at Scotts Valley and responsible for Felton Gold Creek as well. That little gimbal over there, you may have noticed, kind of sounds like R2-D2. That's Whitey. That is one of 2 3D printers that Santa Cruz Public has access to. Pinky lives over at Capitola. I don't know how much sunlight she sees, but Whitey here has been with me for a year and a half or so. Last summer I did a 3D modeling and printing class, which was registration only, about 12 to 13 people, various ages from 10 to 65. I taught them 3D modeling, which is available free on the internet, which is great, and 3D printing. And I used Whitey and I borrowed Pinky from Capitola. And the kids and adults got to either find a model that they wanted to print and modify it, or they created models entirely from scratch. Going along the STEAM programming, they get to learn a skill that will be helpful to them in the future, going into high school, or for older folks, you know, just knowing a new skill, having something to do completely free of charge at the library. I did 2 pop-ups last year where I just sort of went. I posted myself up at a ranch. I had a 3D printer going. I had little things to give out to people passing by. And I explained to them what it was. What is that? And I say, it's a 3D printer. And most of them said, wow, I've never seen one before. I didn't know I wanted to. And I explained to them what it's capable of. Pinky is what's called, or White is what's called a desktop printer. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's small. Fit it on your desktop. It's capable of 5.5 by 5.5 by 5.5 prints. It uses a recyclable plastic called PLA, which is polycarbonate, something or other. And we have, maybe 10, 12 different colors of plastic that you can use. You can only print one color at a time. But all of you have been given little logos. Those are made for 3D printing. The way it works is what's called filament, the plastic, comes in a spool. It gets put into the print head, which superheats the plastic, and then it moves on 3 different axes, you know, forward, backward, up and down, front and back. And it reads the model and prints the object. Print objects are really only limited to the space that's available. larger printers obviously would have a larger print space. So, you know, we had kids and adults printing anything from a hanger for their headphones to sort of a little standee that they could keep at their desk. I've had things that I've printed for the branch that have broken. So, gosh, you know, the light fixture broke. Print a new one. The possibilities really are endless, and it gives its users a fantastic opportunity to learn a new skill, which I think I already said, and reflecting off what Susan said, libraries aren't just about books and reading anymore. Libraries have the opportunity to give their users skills, and I think that's where libraries are going in the future, is skill-based knowledge, because you can have all the knowledge in the world, but if you don't know how to implement it, it's not very good. So having 3D printers is just a fantastic opportunity, and in conjunction with the 3D printers, which right now they're available to anyone who wants to make an appointment, they come, they make an appointment with me, I teach them how to use the software and how to use the printer, and then from there on they can come and make a print once a month, just to sort of keep numbers down. It hasn't been wildly successful yet, but I think that with a bit more advertising, it would certainly rocket up. Let's see. And my future project is actually, right now I'm writing a grant to receive 2 virtual reality sets, which are full tower computers loaded with very high quality graphics cards. And right now we have very high quality internet with the addition of Scenic, which I'm going to and 2 headsets, which I don't know if you've seen VR, but the phone ones are nice. The actual VR sets are impressive. So we would get the computer, the headset, and headphones. And then I kind of wish I had brought up a video and showed you. But with this, we would get 1 set at Scott Valley and 1 set at Grand Sporting. And we would use that to implement educational virtual reality experiences for youth. We're here at Scott Valley. We're going to Silicon Valley. So a lot of the parents here work in Silicon Valley. They come home. And the kids here have the opportunity to get access to this sort of state-of-the-art technology to help them in their endeavors for hopefully something like robotics or technology, and have the ability to implement it as they get older and to be interested in STEAM programming they wouldn't normally have access to in school. So the other VR set would go to grant supporting. We're looking at offering it to low-income, disadvantaged youth, the elderly, giving opportunities to senior citizens that they wouldn't normally have. Some of the educational programs are things like touring the Grand Canyon, or I think there's a Tuscan villa somewhere. And essentially, you put the headset on and you're there. You know, people have a hard time telling the difference, other than that. We're not going to
what about the food?
Do a wine pairing for the...
So we really want to be able to give the opportunity to everyone, not just the youth and not just the elderly, but to anyone who wants to come in and experience this new technology. And hopefully, if it's successful, we want to figure out how to create our own videos so that we can make, say, a 3D or a virtual reality tour of the library, or you know, of Sky Park or something, so that we're matching virtual reality, film, software, editing, anything under the umbrella, and giving the opportunity to use this. And one more thing, we're hoping to use VR and maybe even 3D printing to bridge the gap between the seniors that we want to outreach to and the young people who we're going to market it to. So hopefully we can have a thing where we teach the kids how to use it and then they can go and they can teach older folks how to use the technology. And really just sort of make that connection that I don't see happen a lot anymore, but the connection between the very young and the very old. That's what's on my
plate. Sounds
good. Any questions?
That sounds pretty exciting.
You didn't mention your
Lego puzzle. Oh, yeah. Well, I have Lego puzzle, too.
So I just want to talk about maker spaces. I think if you go in most relatively new libraries, they do have maker spaces with STEAM programming. I think the 3D printing is typical, and I think most libraries have one now. I think this is an area where we're behind. I actually went to a community college with a large makerspace, and they had a balsa wood printer, and the person that was there was making a cabin. I know this sounds really weird, but what they wanted to do is come up with the $5,000 cabin, and so they were programming it and then making it out of balsa wood, which would be light wood that they could then transfer. It was just so amazing. The other thing I think is really popular in library right now is laser printers. It takes some special HVAC systems to remove either the plastic or the metal. I think you see a lot of filmmaking equipment and sound editing. So music studios. I would say that most libraries where you see the big maker spaces are the big urban libraries. They're beautiful. They can spend $1 million on the space themselves. I actually don't think any of our libraries are large enough probably to have a permanent maker space. But I think the ideal would be to have mobile equipment where you can turn a programming room into a makerspace for 2 or 3 hours after school. But what it really means is that the branches have access to a 3D printer, which is $2,000 to $4,000. A really nice one is more like $20,000 to $40,000. It means we have laptop labs. It means we have some of these other sort of equipment in a mobile way. And I did this in the libraries I came from where they were just these carts and you would pull out cart after cart after cart so that people could just use the stuff that's there. We also did a partnership with 3M, which was a headquarters really close to where I worked. And we got a series of engineers and community volunteers that would come and do a bunch of the programming. It was just terrific and they loved it. So I think there's some opportunities there. What else did I want to say? But if you ever get to big cities, you know, like one of the best ones is Madison, Wisconsin, interestingly enough. Chicago has a magnificent makerspace. And I think we can do this in each of our branches. So what's holding us back before we go publicize it? The truth of the matter is it's resources, and it's realigning our resources. So we had all of our professional staff centralized downtown. One step was to move them out to the branch so that they can start getting to know the local community and understanding what is or isn't in the schools. But we are short staff. Where I left, we were hiring full-time youth librarians at our biggest branches, whose full-time work was just to do this. And I have to say that I think you're right, Jennifer, that we started offering the 3D printing classes and the seniors started showing up, though they weren't designed for them. So it was this really wonderful opportunity to sort of bring different ages together. And because you'd also get the six-year-old who knows everything about it as well. So it's terrific intergenerational programming. So we need staff, we need equipment, and we need space. And my reluctance to just advertise at this point is that we're kind of maxed out on capacity right now. I think what the Santa Cruz Public Libraries has done really, really well is proof of concept, where they've gone out and tried this stuff in the community, and they've proven that the community likes it and wants more. But our big challenge in the next year is to figure out how are we going to do this in a consistent way on more of a massive scale? And I don't have the answer to that yet, and I'm hoping that you might give us some suggestions.
Can you go ahead, Cindy?
Do you, other than grants or partnerships, did you ever partner with groups that just wanted to come and do a particular project? I'm thinking of some people at our church who do a lighting for literacy thing, who do a solar kit that middle school kids can put together that then they take to all kinds of places.
You know, where I came from, we never got that far because we weren't covering the demand that we just had. The one thing that we did do that was very popular is we would have community auctions where we would auction off a sort of a maker day with a group. And so, like, the Girl Scout groups would bid on it because they would want the opportunity. A Boy Scout group, children's groups that would want to do it. But, you know, that was not consistent in any way in terms of our provision of services. We also really didn't bring enough stuff out into the community. I mean, at long run, you want to go to other places, the Boys and Girls Club, and bring the stuff in. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have enough coverage of the libraries themselves.
Right.
And so I think it's how we build into that. I tell this story, I've told it to the staff. One day, one of my board members came in and said, I went to Best Buy with the e-reader that I had bought at Best Buy, and I asked them how to use it, and they said, go to your library, they'll tell you. And do we have the capacity, was the question, to really answer all of their questions. And we thought about it as a group, and we decided that if technology is the biggest barriers to people accessing the information they need, we better be the ones who are able to answer those questions. Mm-hmm. So are we ready to meet this demand right now? Absolutely not. Do we need to be?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've got to figure out how to do it. And I'm really grateful because I think that people that have taken this on sort of early in the process, there's a couple others that aren't here, really are kind of far out in front of their colleagues because this scares a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's learning a lot of new stuff. But again, I think they've proven the concept. We can do this. We can do it in a big way. As we get into the schools more, we can learn and support the curriculum that they have.
Well, that was what I was going to ask is in terms of resources and coordinating with the school system. I mean, I know we have more than one, obviously.
So where we came from, I had 5 school districts, and I thought that was a lot. And we started doing things like buying printers that they had in the schools. We would buy the same kind so that people could do their homework.
So that everyone would know the equipment.
And even with 5, there was huge variability in terms of what school districts had and were offering. So I had super sophisticated ones and super unsophisticated ones. So I think we have 10 school districts, don't we?
No,
we have 57 different schools.
It's 10 districts.
It's 10 districts.
In the county.
In the county.
And to be honest, we haven't consistently been in the schools since the recession. Mm-hmm. So this is a long path, but boy, do we need to get started.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To be honest, sir, I think you're one of the secrets. I think we've got to get, there's got to be talent in this community, high-skilled professionals who can help us and are engaged as you are. But I have to say that there are days this takes my breath away in terms of the amount of work that we need to do on it. I'm really excited about the new regional managers because, you know, they've been charged with how do we get kindergartners ready for kindergarten, or 5-year-olds ready for kindergarten? How do we get students to succeed? And how do we partner with the school districts? And I think this is going to be a key element of how we give young people transformational experiences in the library over the next 20 years.
Well, Other comments?
I would just say, I can only speak really to Santa Cruz City Schools, but there's obviously, we're doing the same chicken and egg thing, and there's this real desire to build fab labs and have these makerspaces, and there's certain, and it, again, it's the early adopters, the certain teachers who really want this, but then there's also the cadre of old school folks who are not ready to come on board, and then, but there's also the curriculum piece too. So you can have the bells and whistles, but if you don't have it built into the curriculum, mm-hmm. and so that's where we're really trying to figure out. We're just now starting to offer, and I know Scotts Valley is probably ahead of us on this, but we're just starting to offer AP computer science is just now coming to our high school.
Right.
So,
mm-hmm.
but that's like up here, you know, so this is like kids, you know, could be doing things, makerspace things at kindergarten readiness even. I mean, just, you know, learning.
And I was really intrigued. I went to the Bubbler in Madison, and it's huge.
What is it, the Bubbler?
They call it the Bubbler, which is in Wisconsin. It's a drinking fountain.
Yeah, that's funny.
So I don't know why they call it. Maybe it's ideas bubbling. Uh-huh. But they also have sort of this big workshop, and they hire an artist in residence to come in. So one month it's a woodworker, and the next month it's a quilter, and the next month, and they actually have these hours. What else? They also have a whole thing of sewing machines, which I find really interesting as well. And it's interesting because when I grew up, you always had the sewing machine down in the basement so you could run and do something quick. And so they, a lot of people come in and they're just sewing up a pamphlet.
No, I can totally see why that would be really popular.
But also young people
in a college town like that, yeah.
Fascinated by sewing machines. And this is also another place where older people then could show younger
people. I love that.
This set
Why
of
don't
skills.
We have the sewing machine set up?
Jennifer.
I would love to have like 6 sewing machines here.
That's a fabulous
idea. I can't tell
you
how many people my age don't want, so it blows.
There's a lot of opportunity for, I mean, there are some, like the MA has some really amazing youth programming, and then I'm sure you've met, or you've heard of the Digital Nest, and just Jacob
Martinez. Yeah, I was just
Digital Nest, yeah.
So there are, and those are, you know, reaching out to people who don't have access, not only, you know, so, and then also even like Hearts Fabric does sewing classes,
yeah.
So I could see a lot of potential for some partnership, like, I mean, at some point, like a summit, where we could just come together mm-hmm. and brainstorm some ideas. But, I mean, obviously funding is going to be the huge
thing. Well, that's where I was thinking. What about the friends? Getting the friends involved?
See, I think it's great. I think it's
that's something to get excited
come up with
about.
A really, you know, just a couple of components, mm-hmm. really exciting components, and look for grant, you know, people who.
Well, I love the idea of artists and residents.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something, you know, get a funds program behind, something like that.
And I was at Henry Cole Park, and they have, you know, one of these giant food trucks, but it's been made into a truck for the Sandhills, you know, and they do this at parks. They take a big food truck and they completely reinvent it, and they're really neat spaces, and I thought, wow, it'd be great if you could have artists and residents traveling around parking at different libraries for, say, a month. It would all be stocked with, you know, all of the stuff. And you wouldn't have to move it all inside and then move it back. And it would, you know, the side of this truck, you know, I mean, it's sort of like the Santa Cruz library thing.
The bookmobile.
They put that.
A maker mobile.
What they call it?
There is a maker mobile. I think it's in Missouri.
Yeah, no, a maker mobile, a sewing mobile, an artist mobile. And that would be the kind of thing where you could really boost the advertisement, because you would say, wow, this has been at Garfield Park for like a month, and it's like crazy, and it's going to Aptos for a month, and, you know, so, and it would also sort of, like I said, save on having to move everything, and, you know, some of the branches are going to be huge, and that, you know, I think in the Felton plans, I was thinking, wouldn't it be neat to have a little place you could pull into? And then, you know, sort of unfold it. You kind of unfold counters and stuff. So that could be a grant opportunity.
And really, some of the reasons we're talking for, I keep talking about outside spaces, but also I feel like in this climate, if you have versatile tables you could bring outside, you could do projects.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, Selva Beach, that's my hope.
Yeah. Why don't ask the community?
I think that's why we want to talk about the friends. We need to make the Friends of the Library into a powerhouse.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is the branches are powerhouses, but they need to, and I don't think it means that we don't have powerful branches, but we need to coordinate this to, there's so much opportunity there.
Well, I mean, like you guys were talking about doing a sewing class, which I think is great. I had to learn sewing growing up just to graduate high school.
I did too.
Yeah. And so, but like, you know, I have to reach out and say, hey, the libraries are putting together a sewing class or, you know, something sewing. We're looking for community volunteers to send in your old, you know,
sewing machines.
Oh, lots of old ones.
There probably are a few around. The other thing you'll notice is we need storage, though. If we're going to have all these floating purposes in these rooms, we gotta be able to put these someplace. And so, and it speaks to why we need the flexible furniture and the super flexible spaces. Like, I mean, this one proves itself out too. Mm-hmm. It could have better sound. Mm-hmm. We're working on that. We've got someone coming in this week, so I'm kind of excited. So one of the things I want you to do is hold our feet to that fire, though, in terms of we've got a lot of great ideas. We need to make it a plan, mm-hmm. and which means we're going to have to make some choices, and there's a lot to do. And this is where staff makes a huge difference. I have to say 3D printers don't create the transformational experience.
No. No. The people.
It's the people right. that make the transformational experience.
Right.
And it's these are the kinds of things, though. I told you about going to the city council where the woman talked about the baby ducks. Mm-hmm. One of the city council members in Santa Cruz couldn't stop talking about how when she was a child, she came to the library and they had done a reading and they had baby ducks who then followed the librarian and they did this parade through the whole library.
Hatched the ducks, so they watched the ducks and they waited for the ducks to hatch, and then they hatched, and then they stayed in the library for I think a couple of weeks.
So here's this public official who has this memory that is so clear, and she will forever love the library because of that one experience. Yeah. And I just want to say, for a lot of young people, these are those transformational experiences right now. The young man on the spectrum will probably always remember his robotics club at the library. And so we want to keep doing that.
That's really great. So we have any, are there any other show and tell, or is that it?
That was awesome.
Well, that's pretty awesome. Right. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you to all of you.
Thank you.
Really, really good. Really good. Any other comments from anyone on the commission? From the audience, anything else?
A lot to think about.
And actually, it does put us on the path of the strategic plan.
Very much so. I think this is a core thing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously the current budget is being done and all of that, but that happens every year. And, you know, we've got months now to be thinking about resources for coming next this time next year. And year after that, so.
And the extent to which we can build some of the infrastructure piece into the buildings is going to make a difference in terms of the cost of being able to do these things. Like Scenic for us is life-changing.
Yeah. Well, and I think for those of us who are going to be involved in the buildings, the more we hear these activities will educate us on what we need to be thinking about.
Storage, and
all the, you know, wiring and outlets and all the things that...
They're attractive, flexible buildings. The people in the community will want to contribute and be a part of it because it will be worth the time and any resources they might be willing to share. You know.
And I just want you all to close your eyes and imagine this going on at Garfield Park.
And I know,
I'm
and
just odd
space.
That it can be achieved there.
I know.
Where
24
there's a
kids.
There's a way.
24
kids. The reason why it's a success at Garfield Park is the staff, not that she's here. To be honest, I just learned her name about a year ago. I'm bad with names. But it's the staff. Because I've been in other libraries where it didn't go over so well, and it wasn't because of participation, it was because it wasn't wanted there. So
we have some culture changing to do too.
I think the adults and the other patrons figure it out. It doesn't take long to figure out, because some of them just saying things, people, oh my gosh, Minecraft, I'm like, you know, and it's the decibels, and they're like, and we're like, hey, you know, take it, you know, come back in an hour or, you know, whatever. Right. But I think it's good to see it all happen.
Yeah, most people want to see happy kids in their neighborhood.
Yeah, that's why we did have one patron in Garfield Park that, and he's actually become, we liked each other a lot. He hated me when I first showed up. Because I drove him away from his computers.
Right.
But now, when I show up, he goes, oh, the kids are here, I'm running. And when they're gone, he comes back and we joke.
And more hours will help.
Yeah, that's going to help that too.
Sure is the kids. Because if you don't market your product for the kids, the product is the building, the environment. Oh. Whether they're made to feel welcome,
experience.
If they're going to come back when they're adults. Because the adults who know the library, we're all going to die soon. And you need a new...
That's a happy
question.
Well, I would say there's even a generation of youth now that aren't really using the library because, like, my kids are teenagers, and when the library's closures were happening and we were having weird hours, it didn't become part of their after-school like it was for me growing up.
Right.
I always, you know, and so we've just moved on. And now they have libraries, fortunately, at the schools that are, you know, great resources, but it's not that same. They don't think about it. And so I think, you know, you're right. It's like we've lost a little bit.
Believe
it or not, I have three sons. None of them want to go to the library, but I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because they didn't know what it also from Arizona. They didn't know about the resources at the libraries, like homework help.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I would have loved you guys if I knew about homework help when they were in high school. And stuff like that. Get them. You know, the community needs to know.
Lots of food for thought here. All right. Anything else? So we will adjourn until Monday, May 15th, 6:30 at the downtown library.
And I'll invite Vivian and Erin from the Friends so we can have that conversation.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, we've got some good food for this thought to go to them, too. So.
Maybe we can talk about some of these things.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you.